Wide SEC football. Allie Peek, TJ Pittinger, Will Thomas on this Labor Day Monday morning. All of us have our coffee because all of us are exhausted, but pretty excited about, you know, we're going into the fifth day of college football. Excited. There's more football on today. And I think that we could not have asked for a better week one. TJ, you in particular have to be over the moon celebrating. You were in Tallahassee and you got to watch kind of a resurrection of Florida State football. That what a turnaround. What was the atmosphere like?
Yeah, it was really, really good. And I listen, I don't want to take, I mean, well, I am going to take a victory lap, but I doubted them too. Like I picked Bama to win this thing. Yeah, like I'll own that. And everybody picked Bama. So like, that's not a, but yeah, I thought you asked about the atmosphere specifically, and I mentioned this on my show, and I'm not just saying this because you guys are UF fans, but we've talked about this a lot. The crowd before UF Miami last year was great. And that's why I went to the game. And then the team never gave the crowd something to like latch on to. Like the swamp was a non-factor that entire game. And I really think, you know, Bama drove down for a 9-minute drive and took a lead. And then Florida State had a third and long and completed a 40-yard pass to Squirrel White to really get the crowd like, okay, well, yeah, like we've got something here. But if they'd have just gone 3-and-out there, or if they'd have not been able to move the ball and Bama gets the ball back against a tired defense and goes up 14-0 or 10-0, does it, I mean, you never know how a game's going to play out. But to me, Florida State was able to very early keep the crowd engaged because the crowd was engaged before the game. Everybody was in a good mood. Everybody was excited, even though they kind of all expected, like the crowd was there and ready to show up. But Florida State was able to do enough early to keep the crowd involved. And it definitely impacted the game. There were false starts. There were delay of games. There were plays where, you know, it went from 3rd-and-3 to 3rd-and-8 or 4th-and-1 to 4th-and-6, and they had to punt. So I thought that was huge. And Florida State needed that crowd to be behind them. Now, they played really well, too. I'm not going to say, oh, the crowd won them the game. But they were able to capitalize early. And again, comparing it to being in the swamp last year, I mean, it was boring because Florida never did anything to kind of give the crowd a chance to be excited. And so I thought that was huge. The atmosphere, the environment was a ton of fun. And yeah, anytime your team's winning against a top 10 team, it's going to get even better. But it was one of the best ones I can remember in the last 10 years as far as an atmosphere goes.
You know, in a weekend where there was absolutely some shocking things, I think Florida State beating Alabama 31-17 has to rank up there. Number one, biggest shock of the weekend. And I think, Will, in this case, two things can be true. Florida State looked so much better than we expected them to look out the gate. They have really, it appears, changed some things from the 2-10 season and made some major upgrades. But I also think it's true that this is not Nick Saban's Alabama.
It's definitely not. And this is where I have my hand up, because all summer I was talking about how everyone was exaggerating how much Alabama had fallen off. Sure, Saban's gone, but I thought that culture was still there. A lot of the guys were still there. It was like Ty Simpson, he was there with Saban. I thought that culture was still there. Within the first half hour, I was proven horribly wrong. I mean, the lack of hustle that we saw from Bama's defense, the fact that they were getting bullied by FSU in the trenches without even fighting back, like, sure, Tim Keenan was out of the game. He is not the reason that game went the way it did. So Bama, like, they just looked soft. They looked mentally weak. They were just making mistakes and not capitalizing on good opportunities. So, I mean, you're totally right. This is not at all the same Bama team that we saw 2 or 3 years ago. But on the other side of that, Gus Malzahn might be the perfect guy for FSU right now. I mean, obviously that was against Alabama, so he was like a few levels up, naturally speaking. But, I mean, he looked really good calling that offense. Castellanos looked really good. He looked quick. FSU looked really, really sharp. And I was a little lower on them this season just because I didn't know how much they could really turn it around from that 2-10. And it seems like they're going to prove me wrong too. They looked pretty legit. I think they could be dangerous in the ACC this year.
Gus Malzahn brought his sassiness too, which I always
did. You see his tweet after the game?
His tweet just like all time or something like that. And, you know, that just had to stick in Alabama's craw for sure.
They got to hate that. Is there anybody they hate more? Like, is there anybody that Alabama, I mean, I know there's other rival. I know there's other stuff, but like they got it, especially now. Cause like, oh my gosh.
They absolutely hate Auburn. They hate Gus Malzahn and, you know, Auburn moved a slight bit southwest, I guess, and showed up again. And it did not make them happy for sure. But I do think this really changes my opinion on the trajectory of Florida State. I did not think there was any chance they would beat Alabama. I do think the ACC is an easier conference than some of these other ones. So I didn't necessarily expect that they were going to only win two games again. But to me, if week one, you can take care of business against an Alabama, there is zero reason you can't win the vast majority of your conference games. And so I think we're looking at maybe a 9-win Florida State team, maybe a 10-win Florida State team. And I would not have said that 1 week ago. I probably would have said we were looking at a 5 or 6-win Florida State team that would have been, you know, excited to be bowl eligible. And that would have been an improvement from the year before. So I think Florida State fans suddenly have, you know, a reason to be excited. And I don't want to jump the gun here on Miami, but do y'all know the last time Florida State and Miami were all ranked in the top 15?
I saw it yesterday. I totally forget the year.
Yeah, it has to be
1996.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no way.
There was a 10-year stretch where basically the national champion came from that group, and they, whoever the national champion was, beat the other ones that year. And I don't know. I think I'm excited. I know obviously this is an SEC show, but we're all three located in the state of Florida. And I am kind of excited. I think that college football is better when the state of Florida teams are strong. And I think for Florida, as a Floridian, it makes it incredibly fun for us. And watching what we watched this weekend, there's some good football being played in the state of Florida. Let's talk a little bit. What were you going to say, TJ?
Yeah, I was going to say, you were talking about things that like we wouldn't have said before. And the one thing that I was really, I thought Florida State would have to be the luckier team in this game. Mm-hmm. If I had told you that Florida State was going to be more physical and more dominant up front, like, I think you would have said, like, you need to go get your head checked.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, I mean, they held them to 86 rushing yards. Like, 50 of that came on the first drive. I know there's some sack yardage in there, too. Florida, I don't know if I'm more impressed at Florida State ran for 236 yards. I mean, against Alabama, that's insane.
Yeah.
You know, nobody does that. And so they looked like they cared more. They looked like they wanted it more. And, yeah, I'm still a little bit in shock. Like, I don't really, you know, like, it wasn't just a win. Like, they dominated them. And yardage was close. Time possession was close, all that stuff. But they lost the turnover battle and won. I mean, I still don't. I mean, it is one game, right? You got to go out and win more. But it is the ACC, too. Like, by the composite, there's no more teams on this schedule that have as much talent as Bama. Now, I think there are better teams, you know. But Clemson didn't look great. Miami found a way to win. You know, they looked fine last night. And I think Florida will be really tough. But outside of those three, there's really not an acceptable loss. Football's weird. You usually lose a game you're not supposed to and win a game you're not supposed to. So 9-3 or 8-4 could still happen. But, yeah, I mean, they, you know, who knows what Clemson, Florida, Miami, any of these teams will be by the end of the year or when you kind of play them later. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a game on the schedule that you look at Florida. This is probably the craziest part. There's not a game on Florida State's schedule that you look at and say that's a sure loss anymore. There's tough games, no doubt, going to the Swamp, going into Clemson. But there's not a game on the schedule that they couldn't win.
And we would not have said that a couple days ago. I mean,
2 days ago.
Show a week ago, when we talked about, you know, if Florida State wins, what has to go right? And essentially, the consensus was everything would have to go perfectly right. And it didn't, but they did dominate. This wasn't a we got lucky. It wasn't we had the ball last. And it wasn't, there was a ticky-tack call, any of that. It was just a dominant performance, which I think is what makes it the wildest thing for all of us. Like, crazy things happen in football. So Florida State had beaten Alabama on some wacky, you know, I don't know, something. I think we all could have wrapped our heads around it. This is not that, though, at all, which, I don't know. I know that we always say there's not a lot we can glean from week one, and a lot changes from week one to week 12. But if week one has taught us anything, I think it's that this might be the most parity we've ever had in college football. There was no one that I watched that I was like, oh my gosh, they're 1,000% unstoppable. But there was a ton of teams I watched that were like, ooh, they're going to be good.
Yeah.
And so I do think that this is going to shape up to be a really fun season for all of us.
What about our next game? Where are we going next?
Let's go. Texas, Ohio State. You know, this was the noon kick on Saturday. I still despise noon kicks. It's so stupid. Like, you rob your fans of being able to tailgate. Therefore, you kind of rob your team of a elevated atmosphere, so to speak. Not that the Shoe doesn't have some great games. They do. But if you let them have 8 more hours of tailgating, I promise you it would be even better of an environment. But this game was interesting. We talked on this game, on the show, about how we thought it would be a low scoring game. Mm-hmm. I don't know that any of the three of us thought it was going to be 14-7. Well, when you watched this game, were you more impressed with Ohio State or more disappointed in what you saw from Texas?
I think it was more impressed with Ohio State, right? Because the way I was looking at it, from my point of view, Arch Manning was never going to go out there and throw for like 300 yards and look incredible. He just wasn't, because this is his very first road start. He's on the road against the defending champions, top 3 team in the country. That was never going to happen. But he definitely looked a little worse than I thought he was going to. Like, just the mechanical issues it seemed like he has. When you looked back at the film, like, there were a lot of things that I didn't think he was going to have to worry about. But for Ohio State, I was really impressed with them offensively blocking Texas's front seven. That front seven getting no sacks, that's the only time that's going to happen this year. I'll call that right now. That Texas front seven is incredible. So them getting no sacks on Julian Sain and being able to really kind of mess with him, that was the story of the game. And they did kind of limit Jeremiah Smith. He only caught 6 balls for 43 yards, had a couple of drops. But, I mean, Ohio State just, you know, they made one less mistake. And they were able to stop Texas on 4th downs. I mean, 2 4th downs inside the 10 is unbelievable to get those 2 stops for Ohio State. So I'm probably a little more impressed with Ohio State, but Texas does have a lot of questions that I need them to answer for me before I get really confident in them going forward.
TJ, I want to ask you about Arch Manning, but I want to point something out. So Steve Spurrier, in my opinion, has literally never been wrong. And the man, says some hysterical, sometimes off-color things, but he's always right. And in July, he said something about, you know, I think most people are picking Texas to win the SEC. They've got Arch Manning already winning the Heisman. My question is, if he's that good, how come they let Quinn Ewers play all the time last year? He was a 7th round pick. And now, I do think all the Arch hype is the media's fault. That's not on Arch. And I think he should be allowed the opportunity to grow into the starting role. He didn't ask to be named the Heisman front runner. Everybody else did that for him. However, watching what we watched and then listening to that Spurrier quote back, like, he's not wrong. Did we maybe overestimate what we're going to get from Arch Manning?
I mean, potentially, right? Like, very rarely do guys live up to like hype in general, right? There are some, right? You think about like LeBron coming out, or, you know, Tebow or whatever in college. Like, there are guys who live up to the hype, but a lot of times, yeah, we do overinflate hype for just about everything. So, yeah, I mean, to some degree, Spurrier was absolutely right. I do think the context of playing your first real game in the Shoe against a defense that I think is absolutely elite, and, you know, they're, you know, I don't really know how you would even determine who, like, they probably have the best offensive and defensive player in the country at Ohio State with Caleb Downs. And, you know, I think that, man, they're so stacked everywhere. Defensive line in the middle, back in their secondary with Downs and those guys. So I think that context is important. I know they got to go play Georgia, and I know they've got to go to the Swamp, but I don't know if there's a complete team. I don't think they'll play a better defense all year. I mean, Georgia might be one, and I know Florida's good too, but I don't know they'll play a better defense all year. And I don't, you know, they got to go to the Swamp, and they got to go. Do they go to Athens too? Yeah, that's 3 tough road games. But that's a pretty crazy environment too. And so I think that context is important. If Arch, I almost wonder if this was week 4 and you were playing a big game there, and he would have had like the 3 cupcakes first and then played it, how much different would he look? How much more comfortable? And so I think the jury is still out, because he could come out and really get things moving. They drove the ball better than they scored, right? Because they got stopped a couple of times short. I don't really put that on him. If they score 21 in this game, I mean, they win, right? They don't get stopped twice inside. I mean, you know, so they, they played well enough, I think, to be right there. And obviously they lost by seven, but I mean, you're talking about like two very short yardage plays where we have a completely different context of the way we view, if he goes in there and wins because they convert on two fourth downs, we're
really
having a completely different conversation. Yeah. So, oh man, he wasn't perfect, but he gritted a win out. And so, I mean, those two fourth downs, I mean, I don't really put that on him. So I think that context is important, but yes, was there overhype? For sure. He comes out and has nine touchdowns over the next 2-3 weeks against some, you know, cupcakes. It'll go back up, and then it'll come down to what he does in the swamp, which is their next big test.
Does anybody question Sark's game day management? I feel like this is something, you know, we talked briefly about last season, particularly when Texas played Georgia twice. It seemed like he kind of shot himself in the foot a little bit with his play calling, and it's just, you know, game management overall. And he's always, I think, lauded as this offensive genius, which I mean, he is. He's an incredibly gifted offensive coach. But is this one of those situations where he might be better off if he's not the play caller?
I don't know if I want to go that far to say he should get rid of the responsibilities, but I have a lot of questions about how he managed that game. I mean, you go back to the playoff game against Ohio State last year, it was the same thing. Inside the 10, the play calling is not good. They're running, trying to run to the outside. They get stopped in the scoop and score. And then in this one, I mean, 1 in 5 on fourth downs. None of those fourth downs were like 4th and 17. I think they were mostly all like 4th and 5 or less. How does this offensive genius with one of the most talented offensive stockpiles of talent in the country not figure out how to get 5 yards on some of these fourth downs? It just seems like when he gets down into the red zone and when it's, you know, really a big time play, he just gets way too cute. He's almost afraid to let it go. And looking at Arch Manning's passing chart, it was a lot within the first 5 yards between the line of scrimmage. So I don't know if that's Sarkisian being kind of cute and tentative in the big spot, or maybe it's not trusting Arch fully yet because he's so young. But there were definitely a lot of times in this game where I was kind of looking at the play calling and just wondering like why this wasn't being managed any better.
TJ, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's one game, and I do agree. You and I talked about this offline, just the way that, I mean, Texas should have beat Georgia last year if they were just a little bit better inside the 10 in the red zone, in the SEC championship. It is one game, but it's hard to not think about Norvell giving things over to Gus and seeing their results, and then watching Sark keep it. And I mean, as UF fans, you guys have the same complaint sometimes that Billy should hand it over. It's hard to not see like the two biggest, I mean, Clemson LSU we'll get to in a minute too. So that was a big game too, but it's hard to not see like the two biggest games that happened this weekend and the differences in the way that Florida State was able to hand things off and the way that Sark, you know, and he's still really good. So I'm kind of with Will. I'm not buying it completely, but I do think that distinction does need to be pointed out and just kind of like, he's not going to do anything midseason. So it's not like, you know, you got to worry about it now, but I wonder if they underperform, if that is something that should be taken off his plate. I just think in today's college football, man, you could do this 15 years ago. Like when Jimbo did it for FSU, you could do it and you could be really successful because you weren't dealing with the NIL stuff. You weren't dealing with the transfer portal. Like offensive install, I know this is really in the weeds, but I've heard like Norvell spent like 4 to 5 hours a day on offensive install. That is an insane amount of time. And just then you got to put in, you know, your NIL time and your transfer portal. I don't know how much time Sark spends on offensive install throughout the week, but that's an insane amount of time. Yeah. When you only have, I mean, you got to sleep at some point, right? And you got to do practice and you got to call recruits and you got to, like, that's a huge chunk of time. Like, and I'm not saying like, oh, we beat Alabama because he brought in Malzahn. I mean, yeah, I will say that. But I mean, imagine getting 4 or 5 hours back through the day. Like where Gus just handles that now, or where Sark hires somebody to do that. How much better does your team get? So,
or you don't know, man. Like get that time back, like where he's doing nothing, but you get that time back, and that time goes into recruiting, or that time goes into, you know,
the defense, whatever. The special teams, like everything. Anything. You know,
we as Gator fans, one of the things that, you know, we talk about a lot is the similar situation, and I always think at the end of the day, you're going to need to ask yourself, do I want to be an offensive coordinator, or do I want to be a head coach? Because sometimes you can't do both. And I do think that, you know, college football coaches have to have an ego, particularly head coaches in hard conferences. But I do think the most successful ones are able to look inward and say, like, hey, I'm wearing too many hats. It's not that I wouldn't be a great offensive coordinator if that was all my responsibilities were, but I have a million things on my plate, and handing this one off makes my team better. Not necessarily because the person I'm handing it off to is better at calling plays than I am, but that person has the time to focus and devote to it. And I don't know, it'll be interesting to see when Florida, you know, goes along, if that's still a complaint for UF fans or not. Like, there's nothing we can glean from this weekend, really. But this is a to be determined, I think, for me, for several of these teams moving forward. All right, let's talk about our next game, LSU-Clemson. LSU won 17-10. This really did, you know, go back and forth, kind of go down to the wire. I, for one, thought Clemson was going to win this one. I thought Clemson was more prepared to win today. And that didn't mean that LSU wouldn't be prepared to win tomorrow. I think LSU makes the playoffs. But, man, this LSU team looked better than I expected. Will, what did you see?
Yeah, so, I mean, going into it, I was really high on Clemson's defense versus LSU's offense. And I feel like I was kind of right about that. Like, I don't think LSU was held to 17 the rest of the season.
Yeah.
But LSU's defense, after my predictions, looked me dead in the eye and said, watch this. That unit looked awesome. They were crazy fast. Their secondary played incredible, especially Mansour Delane. He had that interception and a couple of big pass breakups. I mean, Harold Perkins and Whit Weeks are just so fun to watch at linebacker. And Perkins with that closing speed on that final fourth down, I mean, he's really one of the best players in the country. And offensively, Nussmeier looks a lot smarter and calmer to me this year. I was really worried about his interceptions being a gunslinger. I'm way less worried about that now. And in the red zone, I don't understand why they ever call a play that's not lobbing up to Trey Des Green. I mean, that is the most unbeatable strategy I've ever seen. You have a power forward at tight end, just give him the ball. But yeah, I was really, really impressed with LSU. And just super quick, can we talk about this catch rule that Barry and Brown got overruled and Nick Harbor got over? What are we calling a catch now? Does he have to bring it to the sideline? I mean, that was absurd.
It's like not the spirit of the rule. You know what I'm saying? Like when you I don't know, it's just stupid. Like
you caught the ball, you crossed the plane, you went out of bounds, you hit the ground, then it comes out. That you did four thing. It's a catch.
Yeah.
But
the catch. There's whatever. A football move, there was complete control. I don't know. I feel like the more football I watch, the more I'm reminded that I have no freaking idea what the rules actually are. Because it's never like I feel this way about so many aspects of the game because it's called it's not called consistently across across the board. That was a very frustrating moment for me.
Definitely. But yeah, I mean, overall, I was incredibly impressed with LSU. They exceeded my expectations really in every facet. I thought they looked awesome.
I was impressed with their offensive line, which was something that I had questions about because we watched Florida put Nussmeier on his back, you know, what, five times the end of last season. And say that again.
I thought it was like seven sacks.
It might have been more than five, a lot. And that was going to be one of the things that I was concerned about for LSU was what are they going to put together for this offensive line? And I thought it was something that was going to take a few weeks to fully develop. And so Clemson was not the greatest opponent for them to open with because Clemson does have such a strong defensive line. And they absolutely proved me wrong. I will tell you, they made this loss that I predict to them coming in a couple of weeks look. Like I might be really right about that. I don't know. But TJ, what did you think of Clemson? I think we talked about this being one of the most playoff ready teams in September, or I guess August, going into this season, and maybe not.
Yeah, I mean they're owing their last four against the SEC now over the last 2 years.
LSU did break the streak. They were 0-5 in their last five, so that streak is dead.
Somebody was going to break their streak, right? Either Clemson against the SEC or LSU to open the season. It causes a lot of doubts. Now, I will say this. They got beat by Georgia by 30 last year in the opener and then still found a way to win the ACC. And so they do play differently. I don't know, man. Clemson did not score in the second half. I mean, it causes a ton of doubts, especially when you see Miami and Florida State go out and beat top 10 opponents. Now I realize that, you know, it's just one game, right? So you don't want to get too high, too low. But it causes a ton of doubts for Florida State and Miami are in that league. You know, Georgia Tech found a way on the road. Louisville's going to be a tough team. I think Clemson's got a lot of tough stuff on their side. We'll see how UNC looks tonight. Clemson has to play them too. If I had to make a bet right now, I would still pick Clemson to win the ACC. I think they're probably the safest bet. And so by default, like, yeah, they still, and I think LSU, I think it said more about LSU, to be honest with you. You know, like I thought this would be a close game that Clemson would somehow find a way to win. And I'm not down on Clemson, like, oh man, now they're a terrible team. But I mean, you had a lead in the, I mean, you need to finish at home. You need to score some kind of points at home. And they did. They drove down at the end and they had a 4th-and-4. Like I thought it was going to overtime at that point. Everybody else probably did too. But I mean, you've just got to be a little bit better than Clemson was. But that said, I wrote them off last year. I wrote them off the year before when they lost to Duke to open the year, and they, you know, continue to just win the ACC every year. So they'll probably do it again after this. And their schedule sets up where they've got tough games on it with Florida State, Louisville, Georgia Tech, UNC, South Carolina at the end of the year, who won yesterday. But they probably will still go like 10-2 or 11-1 and win the conference. So I'm more impressed with all that to say, I'm more impressed with LSU, who I didn't put in my playoff before, and I squarely have them in that playoff now, thinking about, well, they should beat Bama. They, you know, I still think they beat Florida in a couple of weeks, though that's not a sure thing. But I'm more impressed with LSU than I am like depressed about Clemson.
We're not going to go heavy into them, but I do think it's important to note that Miami beat Notre Dame last night, 27-24. This was a back and forth. Miami's got a really good running game. And then South Carolina beat Virginia Tech 24-11, which is such an odd score, but they did get that safety in there. Any points on those games either one of you want to talk about before we preview what's coming up?
I'll talk about Carolina for a second. I mean, this is a team that I think I have them going to Atlanta this year. That's my projection for them. I think that offense can be absolutely incredible. And you kind of saw them working out those kinks just offensively week one. But that Sellers to Harbor connection is very dangerous when they say that Harbor caught the ball. And I mean, Roswell Faison looked explosive at running back. Attaway seemed to be the first option, but those running backs are really good. Lenore Sellers might be an unsackable human being. I mean, some of those scrambles and the broken sacks were just absolutely ridiculous. Their defense looked great. Kyron Jones for V-Tech only went 15 of 35 with 2 picks. Dylan Stewart looked good. Judge Collier getting hurt in their secondary does concern me a little bit, because when his replacements came in, it was a little bit of a problem. Some flags, Tech got some deep passes, but I really liked what I saw from Carolina, especially in that second half when they kind of got into a bit more of a rhythm. And I'm very excited to watch them keep playing this year.
I'll go with the other game. I thought Miami's trenches were incredible, and they almost blew it late. There's no doubt. I mean, typical Mario Cristobal, terrible fourth quarter play and not being able to hold on to a game, but they did find a way. So massive credit there against a Notre Dame team that, man, just looked like they didn't belong in the first half. Now credit to CJ Carr and that team for coming back and making it competitive and giving us a fun fourth quarter. But Miami's trenches bullied them, and Mario has recruited he's recruited everything really well, but he's recruited the trenches very, very well. And I think Notre Dame has good trenches that Miami just absolutely pushed around. The push that they were getting was incredible. I don't think we talked about this game specifically last week because we kept it mostly SEC focused, but I'm not as low on Carson Beck as a lot of people were. I thought not that he would look more like 23 than, yeah, but I just thought he would be better with a better offensive line. The catch by CJ Daniels, shout out Liberty University, was incredible. That should have been picked, if anything, but the way he was able to pull that in, Odell Beckham Jr. style. I mean, Miami still has a lot to get fixed. Their secondary still, I don't think, is all the way there. It's better than last year, but their trenches and the way that Beck played, I thought Beck played really well. And they don't have to ask him to do too much because they can run on just about anybody. So I think that Miami Florida game should get game day, as long as Florida doesn't lose by like a ton or something to LSU. But that's going to be a really good game. I think Miami Florida State will be a good game, and I think Florida State Florida will be a good game at the end of the year. So maybe we're at a point where the Big Three is actually back. We'll see.
All right. Well, let's talk about some games upcoming. It is important to note TCU North Carolina tonight. We'll get to see the preview of Belichick in college football, which I think will be fun. But kind of the marquee game next week, Michigan travels to Norman to take on Oklahoma. I love this matchup. I think this is a fun game. I love the SEC's push to schedule really strong out of conference games. I feel like these are two traditional schools that we really don't get to see play all that often. Will, what are you going to be looking for in Oklahoma that to see if maybe they've taken a step this offseason?
I'm going to look for their offensive line to look a lot stronger than they did in this past week against Illinois State. Now they were fine against Illinois State. I mean, they let Mateer throw for almost 400 yards, three touchdowns. It was pass heavy, but they weren't getting a lot of push in the running game. Their offensive line wasn't. So Michigan, their trenches, fun fact, are going to be stronger than Illinois State's. So I need to see them get a little healthier, get a little more push. Hopefully they're a little stronger that next one. Because for Michigan, Underwood looked pretty solid in his debut. And Justice Haynes ran for 159 yards and three scores. So the trenches on both sides of the ball for Oklahoma are going to have to be really strong. And I have a few more questions offensively on that O-line. But John Mateer, I thought, looked awesome. They had three receivers go over 85 yards. Oklahoma's offense seems to be pretty much exactly what I thought it was going to be, as long as their offensive line does come together.
Are we going to see a low-scoring game a la Ohio State, Texas, TJ?
Yeah, I think Michigan, I mean, I really like, you know, the Mateer-Ott combo, but I do think Michigan's got a good defense. And so I don't think this is one where, I mean, I don't think Michigan wants to just pass the ball around 50 times on a really good defense. Or even comfortable trying to grind this out, keep. Oh, did you lose me for a second? Keep it close and keep this a game late. I don't think you want to put it all on Bryce Underwood's shoulders, though. I do think he looked like Will said, I think he looked good this weekend. So I think they made the right decision to get him action as early as possible and roll with that. So yeah, I think lower scoring, but I'm not like a full Oklahoma homer, but I love Ott and Mateer. If Oklahoma gets things rolling, I could see them running it up. Now I'm not predicting that. I don't think they, you know, blow them out or anything like that, but if their defense is playing well, their offense is playing well, their offensive line plays a little bit better than they did last week. I mean, I love the combo and I love the changes that they made. Shoot, after week one, are you confident that Texas wins that game when they play in the Red River? You know, I think that I certainly would have more confidence in Mateer at the quarterback position with what we've seen a week in. So I think lower scoring. Let me think on a score before you ask me. But that would be, 21-17 or something really close like that. But yeah, I don't think this is a game that's played in the 50s.
Vegas says Oklahoma as a 2.5-point favorite, which essentially would be the home field advantage, right? This is an even game, basically, in Vegas's eyes. Will, who you got?
I've got Oklahoma. I got Oklahoma winning 10 games this year, and I think that this is sort of their statement game. I mean, last week, they only scored 35 against Illinois State. I think a lot of that was, we're not going to show you our playbook 7 days before we play Michigan. I think they can score pretty much on anybody, but I do. And the other side of this is how many quarterbacks can we look at who were new starters on the road this weekend who were any good? Yeah. CJ Carr played good. The list seems like it kind of ends there. Yeah. So Underwood did get his first game in at home, but now he's got to come on the road to an SEC team. That place is going to be going bonkers. I think this spot is very good for Oklahoma, and I'm a little higher on the score than TJ is. I got like 31-21 Oklahoma. I think they cover and win by about two scores, although I said about Clemson last week too, so we'll see what happens.
I'll just stick with maybe Will's talked me up just a little bit, but I'll go like 24-17. I'll say Oklahoma wins by about a touchdown. I think it's too much to go on the road and ask a true freshman to go out there and get it done. I like Oklahoma's defense too. So, not super high scoring, but I'll go slightly higher because Will talked me up a little bit. 24-17 Sooners.
Okay. I like Oklahoma as well, probably because I'm an SEC homer, but I like Mateer. And I'm excited for this one though, because it's a matchup we don't get to see all that often. I do major points for scheduling tough games like this. We have had such a cool start to the college football season because people went out on a limb. Now, will they be rewarded as such when the playoffs come around? They tell us they will, but I'll be interested to see if that really plays out, because we won't see games like this in the future if it doesn't. Let's pivot to UF versus USF. I think this game is incredibly intriguing. Had you asked me a week ago what percentage Florida had of winning it, I probably would have told you 95% because nothing in college football is ever a guarantee. I think I would dial that back a little bit now. I don't expect that Florida will lose this ball game, but USF's domination of Boise State, who was a playoff team last year, and I mean, we can argue whether or not they really belonged in the playoffs all we want, but they were a playoff team last year. I did not expect this Alex Golish-led team to really just dominate from start to finish. So it makes me wary might be a strong word, but I think the Gators better not look ahead. You know, you have LSU the week after that. That is not the time to look ahead. USF is going to come to Gainesville ready to play. Will, are you has your view on this game changed at all after we watched last week?
It has, but I'm looking at this almost in the reverse way. USF looking as good as they did in week one is absolutely a good thing for Florida because of what you mentioned. Now they're not going to, the threat of a look ahead spot where they falter is way lower, right? Because let's say USF just wins that game by a field goal. Florida's main focus is they won't say it's true, but like we got LSU next week. Then Byron Brown walks into the swamp and they're not ready for it. And all of a sudden you're down 10-0. So I think USF playing that good, potentially up to where they'll be ranked, is a good thing for Florida because now they know that they've got to show up and play. So there wasn't a whole lot of run game for USF against Boise, and we saw Boise really struggle to tackle in general. So that makes me feel confident about Florida being able to stop the running game, at least outside of Byron Brown. There were explosive pass rates to guys, pass plays like guys that chased Nimrod in the offense, and then obviously that fake punt to Keshawn Singleton. So I feel pretty confident about Florida. I mean, that line's just about 3 scores. And like I said, I really do think South Florida looking as good as they did is a benefit to Florida because now there's no chance that they're going to sleepwalk into this and just get ready to go on the plane to Baton Rouge. They'll be ready to actually beat up on USF at home and get ready for SEC play.
I sat in the stands on Saturday and watched Florida dismantle LIU. There is absolutely nothing really that can be gleaned from a game when you play an opponent that's one step above a high school team. But Florida played disciplined football, which is not the kind of football I would maybe label the Napier era as prior to this. They had no penalties, which has not happened in a very long time in Gainesville. And the defense looked sweltering. Now, again, you're playing a team that's one step above a high school team, but I did think the defense maybe looked a tick better than I was expecting. The offense, specifically the offensive line, looked a tick worse than I was expecting from Florida. But also was a little concerned that they missed 3 field goals. Trace Mack missed 3 field goals total last season, missed 3 on Saturday, including a 39 and a 40 yarder, which the third one was incredibly long. And so that was just, you know, get your practice kicks in. I don't hold that against him, but you should be good from 39 and 40 yards every single time. And Florida wasn't. So things to work on, but overall I feel like they looked on track. They looked about how I expected them to look. TJ, I don't know if you got to see any of the game. You were in Tallahassee celebrating your victory. But have you watched anything from that Florida game and did anything stand out to you?
Yeah, I wonder, I did watch the, you know, on YouTube, they throw like the 15-minute condensed game on after. So it's a great way to catch up on all these games. But yeah, I wonder about like interest level, you know, like in games like this, like how much in the LIU game, right? Like you're pumped up because of the swamp and it's game one and all these things, but like, you still know that like, you know, what's the, like what Buchholz could probably, you know, run out there and beat LIU. Right. So I think that is something that I wonder is how, you know, you think about the offensive line or just whatever. Now I do think Smack's an issue and I think he'll pull it together, but that is a problem. But I think they'll be kind of like what Will said. USF, I mean, maybe being ranked, we'll find out tomorrow morning. Again, we're doing this on Monday if you watch it later in the week. So we'll find out if, you know, is USF ranked, is FSU ranked, these different teams that had big wins. USF might be ranked and it's still USF. Like it's still little brother, but I do think it gets Florida's attention a little bit more. And you believe, like everybody can say what they want about Napier, this, that, and the other. Like they will correct the things that were messed up. Now, yeah. I mean, you know, it's hard to correct like a kicker. Yeah, that's just all mental, right? And Allie knows that maybe better than anybody. But I do think that like the things that Florida fans looked at and said like, you know, it wasn't super impressed with this, or I've got concerns here. Like that'll all get corrected this week. And I'm with Will. I think, yeah, could USF pull off this upset? I mean, I guess, but to me, like trench play will really matter. They've got similar trenches to Boise, and that's why they were able to push them a little bit. I think the mismatch in the trenches is bigger than what I thought the mismatch in the trenches was with Alabama, Florida State. Like Florida's trenches are really good, and I don't think USF can really compare there. Brown would have to absolutely go off, and Golish and those guys would have to call a game like Miles. Like it would have to be almost a Florida State Bama repeat, which I guess, you know, college football has told us that that can happen. But I do think that that's a big deal in this matchup. And I mean, I'd like to see USF be competitive because I like seeing good games, but man, I don't know. I think Florida rolls here.
Yeah. I mean, I think to say concerns is such a strong word. I don't have concerns about Florida's line. I just maybe expected a little bit more out the gate because this is a line that's supposed to be a top five offensive line. But I did think it was encouraging to see you watch the growth of DJ Lagway in real time during the first half, which I thought was cool to see. You know, he's missed a lot of reps with this wide receiver core. Timing is not something that you can replicate. You know, you have to literally get out there and do it. And he has missed a lot of time. And I think a lot of the time he missed was Florida being incredibly conservative to preserve him for this season. And watching the improvement over the course of the two quarters that he played made me think, one, this was a good decision, because if it keeps him healthier, we watched how much he improved in a short amount of time. But two, it made me grateful that Florida didn't open with a Utah or a Miami this season. And maybe that strategy for keeping him healthy would have changed had the opponent been different. I think they got the ability to bring him along more slowly because they had two warm-up games before getting into conference play. But he played a little bit longer than maybe I expected, but I think that's because it was a little rocky in the beginning and then you watched it continue to progress. I thought the interesting part of it is we have been talking this entire offseason about whether it's going to be Harrison Bailey or whether it's going to be Aiden Warner as the backup. And that wasn't the case at all. You know, I was incredibly surprised. Was number two something that you were just completely caught off by as well? Well, sorry, I'm stumbling right there.
I wasn't super caught off guard. I mean, I knew that it was such a battle, but I mean, Tremel Jones had a lot of buzz coming in and he was very impressive throughout camp. I'm not surprised that it wasn't Harrison Bailey, at least, because he definitely seems to be in there as a safety net. I'm the oldest guy here. Let me just kind of help you guys out. Yeah. I was surprised we didn't see Aiden Warner at all. I was surprised by that because, I mean, Tremel looked really good, but, I mean, that game was a blowout. I was a little surprised that nobody else got in the mix, but I liked what I saw from Tremel Jones a lot. He looked really sharp, great throws. He looked quick on his feet. So he looks pretty legit.
Yeah, he did. He looked really well and really good. And I was kind of expecting maybe we would see all three guys, but if you've just squarely decided that Jones is your solid number two, he is so young that I guess giving him the entire second half to get some experience makes sense. That was one of the more interesting storylines, I think, of the game for me. And then how about VB3 and that one-handed catch? Vernell played with my husband, Eric. We know each other from college. His granddad played with my dad. And just such a cool moment. You knew the second it happened, it was going to be in the ESPN top 10 and ended up being number one in ESPN's top 10. There was a catch last night by Miami that was a very similar
yeah.
catch.
Both of those were like, dude, what are we doing now? Like, I remember when Odell Beckham Jr. did that the first time and it was just like, we've never seen it before. Now guys do that. Like Ricky Pearsall did that a few weeks ago. Keon Coleman did that a couple of years ago. Guys are just doing that now. And I'm just like, all of you are ridiculous. You know, like this is stupid.
Funniest part of that Vernell catch is that he could have just kept running, caught it, and scored. I think he did that on purpose. I think he knew what he could do. I'm going to backpedal for 8 yards for fun. And just
the touchdown, this. Yeah, if he would have just done that, it would not have made top 10. But he's this game's over. I'd like to make it.
Why not? Yeah, watch this.
Most yards by a freshman making his first start, I want to say since Percy. did it. I don't know. There were some records broken by him, but I am excited to see what he can do against USF, continues to do. Him starting game one was also something that was a little bit of a storyline. And, you know, we heard this whole summer about Dallas Wilson, and Wilson was out. He was in a boot on the sidelines. But VB, I mean, that's a storyline. I mean, he played incredible. He's so young, true freshman. I definitely don't want to anoint anybody the second coming of anybody else, but there was a lot of people commenting about somebody else that used to wear the number 8 jersey and some similarities that they saw. We won't speak it in here just yet, but okay, this USF Florida game. What are you predicting, TJ, is a reasonable score? I know you think Florida wins.
I think Florida, I looked it up just now. Florida's about a 10-point favorite. I think they cover that. I've seen, well, I guess I see like 11.5 here on some places. So, yeah, I mean, I would think Florida wins by at least 2 touchdowns. I mean, Allie and I both live in Tampa, for anybody watching. So, like, I kind of have an affinity for USF and want them to do well. So I'd like to think they could keep this to 2 scores, but I mean, I could see this one getting out of hand. No offense to USF. I don't think they're good enough in the trenches. I don't think Brown's going to be able to run like he was against Boise, who just, you know, was that more about USF or more about Boise? We'll find out on Saturday. But I don't know, something like, you know, I think Florida goes for 35 and, you know, I'll give the smack a field goal, 38 to, I don't know, 17. I'll say that they keep it like not a laugher, but just not really in competition. 38-17 UF.
All right. Well, what do you think?
I had 38-20. That was pretty close. I mean, pretty much for the same reason that you had. I think that it'll be roughly competitive, but I think Florida just leans on them. I mean, Byron Brown is going to make some plays. That's just who he is. So yeah, I think USF can get the 20. But yeah, I think Florida's just a little too good in this game. I got him going for 38. So Florida will win this decently comfortably, but it won't be a laugher.
Okay, so I'm going 45-17. I honestly walked away from this game most excited about Florida's defense. And again, it was LIU. But I think 20 points might be an insult to this defense.
I know.
Say 45-17. No. What, TJ?
That's what I was thinking too. I was like, is 17 still too much for this defense?
It's more about the points given up than the points scored for me. I think I don't know. I'm not insulting that defense in that way. And 17 might be too much. We shall see. Okay. How about another intriguing SEC Big 12 matchup, Missouri, Kansas. Two teams that I don't know, maybe we don't talk about as much as maybe we should, but this is kind of an interesting matchup as well. Will, who do you like in this one?
So I think I like Missouri, but in a really close one. I mean, this used to be a big time rivalry when they're both in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. It got revived a little bit recently. And for Kansas, I'll just start with them. I mean, Jalen Daniels is so fun to watch. He's got 7 touchdowns and a pick so far this year. He makes everybody look great on that offense. His number one receiver is Emmanuel Henderson Jr., who has 2 touchdowns already this year. They're from Missouri. Bo Prabula looked really, really good. He was playing against Central Arkansas, but he played a lot better than I thought he was going to. And he kind of won that quarterback battle by default because Sam Horn got hurt. But in that game, Prabula was 23 of 28 passing, threw for 283 and 2 touchdowns. Ahmad Hardy, who I believe could lead the conference in rushing yards, ran for 100 and another touchdown. And my biggest question in this one is if Missouri's front 7 can stop Jalen Daniels from being able to create and run free and really kind of keep that secondary on their toes. So Josiah Trotter at linebacker, he needs to lead that effort. He's who I believe is their best defensive player. And Damon Wilson the second, he had 2 sacks in the opener. Can he keep that up and keep getting to Daniels in the backfield, try and flush him out for Trotter? I think it's really hard to predict. I like both these teams so much. I think it's incredibly close. I've got Kansas covering that plus 6.5. I'll go Missouri by a field goal, probably somewhere around that.
TJ, what do you think? What are you looking for in this one?
Yeah, it's all Jalen Daniels. I haven't looked at the latest odds, but I mean, he's the Heisman winner right now. If the vote is today, he's winning it. Now, it's been 2 games against not very good competition, but he is great. And I think, it all comes down. I mean, he is the answer. If they're going to win this game, it's because he puts them on their back and rolls. I think Missouri's a little bit better. I mean, no, I don't think they're a little better defensively. Although Kansas is 2 games. I mean, they've held the opponent to you know, what, 7 and 7, you know, 7 points each time. That is Fresno State and Wagner. So I, you know, I'm not saying that that's anything that to be too impressed by, but I mean, they're sitting at 2-0 because they play that week zero game. Missouri looked really good against a nobody. I get it. But I do think that Missouri, I mean, they figured out something with the quarterback position for sure. I want to lean Missouri on this. I think, you know, trenches is where games are won, but I do have a lot of faith in Jalen Daniels. Last year was a down year for Daniels for me. A lot of people were expecting big things. He got hurt. That, you know, that's a big deal too, but just didn't play the way I think that a lot of Kansas and Big 12 and, you know, national folks thought he would. I'll go with the upset here. I'll say Kansas finds a way. It's on the road. Missouri should win this game. There's no doubt, especially being about a touchdown favorite. I'll say Kansas and Jalen Daniels are able to pull the upset. As good as week one was, this, you know, week two, not as crazy with the big matchups. This is one that people should absolutely watch at 3:30. This is a huge game. It's going to be a lot of fun. Contrasting styles. I'll pick Kansas in the upset with zero confidence, but I don't know, 28-24.
Okay, look at that. The line is 6.5. So as TJ said, close to a touchdown. I think Missouri wins by about that. I'm going to say, let's go 27-21. Maybe they don't fully cover the spread. All right, let's go on to our last game of the week. Will, you did give me your prediction in that, right?
I did, yeah. Missouri by a field goal. I mean, I'll go 27-24.
Okay, I was starting to question myself there. Okay, the last game, I haven't fully finished my coffee, and it is early, and I had 12 fifth graders spend the night last night. So, you know, brain is not fully functioning as optimally as it could be. Let's talk about Mississippi State, Arizona State. This is also a matchup that we don't get to see very often, and kind of a cool week two game. Mississippi State has just been a train wreck the last couple of years here. Are they able to pull it together and have a semi-functional season? Now, I think, you know, having a semi-functional season and winning a lot of games in the SEC are not the same thing at all. You know, somebody has to be the 8th, the 9th, the 10th, the 11th, the 12th best team in the SEC, you know, 13th, 14th, whatever. You could actually be a pretty decent team if we stuck you in any other conference and still be kind of bottom of the barrel of the SEC. But Will, how do they stack up against Arizona State?
So if you look at it on paper and you just kind of take your assumptions about each team, this game shouldn't be very close. Yeah. The spread's under a touchdown. So Arizona State the books are almost telling you they're kind of walking into a trap. Now, Sam Leavitt looked really dynamic in their opener. He threw for 257, ran for 73. Jordan Tyson is one of the best receivers in the country out there. He caught 12 passes for 141 and 2 touchdowns. They forced 3 sacks in ATFLs against Northern Arizona. Granted, but that defensive front does look pretty productive. And then for Mississippi State, they were able to pull away from Southern Miss in the second half of that game. Shaping through for 270 and a touchdown. Devon Booth and Fluff Bothwell, I think, are a very good complementary running back 1 and 2. And the receiving yards are very well spread out for Mississippi State. I mean, it wasn't just one or two guys. Like, Chapin was able to really spread that ball around. Because of how this number looks and what I've been able to learn so far from losing bets is that Arizona State is a bit of a trap spot here.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be really, really close. I'm not ready to say that Mississippi State is going to be able to win this game because I think they're just that, like, there's that one tick short of really being able to pull off an upset like this, but this game should be really, really good. I'll probably lean like 31-27 Arizona State.
They played each other a year ago and Arizona State won by 7. Now Arizona State got much better as the year went on. And to start the year last year, we didn't think Arizona State would be very good, evidenced by them being picked last in the Big 12.
Kim Scottabo did have 230 yards in that game.
Without him, though. How can they, if they're not able to run effectively?
262 yards, actually. Excuse me.
That's a big problem if they're not able to run effectively on the road. You've got to be able to run on the road. Now, I've got a ton of confidence in Leavitt, and I think that he's probably, I mean, my Sawyer Robertson hype from last week is lacking a little bit, but Leavitt might be the best quarterback in the Big 12. And so I do have a lot of confidence in him. And I do think, you know, very rarely do you say that the Jimmys and Joes match up well with an SEC program. If there's one that you think it might, it's this one, right? And it's not a ton of hate towards Mississippi State, but I think they and their fans kind of know where they are as a program. It would be nice for them to be able to pick up this win because there's not a lot of guaranteed wins left on this schedule when you look at who they have to play. But I just, you know, quarterback play is important. I know Chapin had a nice finish, but I lean Arizona State here pretty heavily. It wouldn't surprise me if it's close. I think anytime you go on the road and you're playing a team and an environment that's the SEC, even though it's Mississippi State, I think that's tough, you know, but they've got good fans. I mean, they've been ranked high before and their fans expect them to be better. So I don't know. I'm kind of in line with Will. I think maybe Arizona State gets something late to put it away. They didn't do a great job early in the year last year. They got much better as the year went on. So maybe that's a question. Do they keep it, let it be closer than it really should be? But they were good on the road at the end of last year. I mean, I think they beat Kansas State on the road. They beat, I had it up a second ago. They beat Arizona on the road 49-7. They beat Oklahoma State on the road. They doubled up their score. So they were good on the road at times last year. So I think they win by 10. Give me like 31-21.
All right, Will, what's your score prediction there?
I'll go 31-27 Arizona State. I do respect Mississippi State enough to keep this close. And I mean, home opener with those cowbells, I'm not sure anybody in Arizona has even ever seen a cowbell. So that could be a bit of a culture shock for them. I do think Arizona State will pull it off, but I think it'll be a war.
Last year, Arizona State won 30-23. Again, Scataboo had that 264 rushing yards in it. I do think Arizona State wins. I think it's closer. I'm going to say 35-28. A decent showing for Mississippi State, but maybe not quite good enough. But as TJ said, there's only so many wins on that schedule. So if you can pluck one this weekend, you're going to want to do it. All right, guys, we got another exciting week 2 slate of games, and it's going to be fun to watch. Anything else we should have our eye on before we head out of here?
The only thing I'll say is shout out to Lee Corso, who was on fire this weekend, and we did have it up at the tailgate. We had, you know, game day playing and the speaker hook. Usually we play music with the games because you really can't hear the commentary, but we had Corso turned up. Especially when he picked FSU and everybody was like, that was cute. And then he ended up being right. So shout out to Corso, who was on fire. Ali mentioned 6-for-6 and all the programs that he, was somewhat affiliated with or played for or whatever. And then, he picked all the big games right too. He got Ohio State. He got, he was on fire. So shout out to Corso.
I saw a meme this weekend that said something like, try explaining to somebody who doesn't follow college football that you got teary-eyed watching a 90-year-old man put a mascot head on. That was totally me on Saturday. You know, I was actually kind of bummed at, I had to go to a birthday party and I was like, are you joking me that you really scheduled a birthday party on Lee Corso's last game day appearance? Like, what is wrong with you?
That's even worse than a fall wedding.
It is. Like, don't have kids in the fall. Don't schedule their parties on a Wednesday afternoon. I don't know. Just do something. This was not it. But, I think Lee Corso has shaped who we are as college football fans. You know, I learned so much tuning in every single Saturday, starting as a really young child. And he was entertaining and he was fun and he spoke football in a way that let those of us who didn't play fully understand and buy in. And I mean, I saw something that said, imagine coaching for 30 years and then being told that the next 30 years we're going to be more influential on the sport than you coached in.
Pay said that, and I thought that was a really good point. Like, if you had told him after he was done playing and coaching that, like, you haven't even touched the surface of what you'll eventually do, he probably would have looked at you and said, you're crazy, dude. I'm just going to go live in a beach house and kick my feet up and not. And not in a bad way, but like nobody remembers Corso. I mean, we like that he played at Florida State and we hold on to that. But I've seen one Lee Corso highlight ever. And, as a Florida State guy, you know, I couldn't even tell you where all he coached, you know, but he has been the focal point of college football and from a media perspective for the last 30 years. And I mean, shout out to him. I'm glad that he was able to do it one more time.
Yeah. I thought, I don't know. Well, you're a little bit younger than us. So I don't know if you, did you grow up just watching Corso?
I don't remember college football without him. I mean, I'm just 22. So I'm significantly younger than his just TV.
I thought you were about to say significantly younger than you guys.
All right, Will, slow it down.
I'm not saying that stuff yet, but I mean, but yeah, I can't remember a single Saturday where I wasn't watching him put on a mascot head. Yeah. So it's really going to be, it's going to be different now that I have to focus on just like Desmond Howard making picks, but whatever. But it was, it's definitely going to be a different not seeing him. And I mean, yeah, he really defined college football for me to this point in my life still. So, I mean, I got hit with the wave of emotion when he was doing that little wave with Brutus on his head again. Yeah. And just seeing that whole crew, you know, really showing their admiration for him, the whole stadium giving him a standing ovation, that was incredible. So, I mean, yeah, he's definitely a big loss for college football, but he had an incredible career, and he deserves to go. He deserves to go relax now.
I completely agree. I do think it's also important to note that he actually recruited the first African-American player to Maryland, which was the first school in the ACC to have a black player. So I think that, you know, breaking some barriers there as well, which is pretty remarkable as well. Well, all right, guys, Will, tell everybody where they can follow you on social media.
You can find me on Twitter at WThomasSports if you want to argue about SEC football any day of the week.
All right, TJ.
Yeah, TJ underscore Pittenger. If you say anything I don't like, I'll just post the final score of the Bama game. So,
well, that's a Miami fan strategy. All right, I'm at Allie underscore Peak. Feel free to argue with all of us. Pick on them instead of me. For with SEC football all week long. We will see you guys next week.